Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Xander Keg. I'm flying solo today. Dr. An is away. From time to time, we have a returning guest come back to talk about something that has happened between the last time we spoke with them and now. And so this is true for our guest today. Our guest today is Dr. Kathleen Stock from the Lesbian Project. And Dr. Stock is going to be talking about a legal ruling that took place in the UK Supreme Court recently. But I'm going to let her dive into that because it's a little more complex than I can comprehend. But let me start off by saying to Dr. Stock, welcome back to the Umbrella Hour.
Hi, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, of course. We'll go casual and I'll be Xander and you can be
Oh,
Kathleen if
yeah,
that's
of
okay.
course. Yeah, of course.
Okay, so I know the gist of it. The UK Supreme Court had a case brought to it from a group of women in or an organization in Scotland, and there was a ruling that just came down. So maybe you could tell us the story about where this came from, where it started from, and then the ruling or the decision, and then let's talk about now, what's going on
Okay.
now as a result.
I think to explain this properly, and bearing in mind that I'm not a lawyer, so I won't get into finer detail, and I may occasionally get finer detail wrong because it is quite complicated, but this is my understanding of it. So you have to go back to, first of all, 2004, when in the UK the Gender Recognition Act was brought in. And this was a piece of legislation that, on the face of it, was there to allow people of one sex to legally transition to another sex, something in that area, although the wording of the act was already very confused. Looking back, it looks like people didn't really understand, the legislators didn't really understand the language they were using. It was talking about acquired gender, and gender, as usual, was very ambiguous. And even in that piece of legislation, there were carve outs. So in 2004, they could see there would need to be carve outs for things like sport. There was also a carve out for, interestingly enough, for inheritance, so of titles. The upper class or aristocratic title would continue to go down the male line. It couldn't swap. Even though this law was presented as, for all intents and purposes, allowing someone to get a certificate that says, my sex has changed now, I am now a woman or a man where I wasn't before, there were bits of social life that were excluded. Then in 2010 came another act called the Equality Act, and that protected nine characteristics: age, disability, pregnancy, but also sex and gender reassignment. So now you've got some problems, basically, in how to understand the relationship between these two acts. Because on the one hand, these are laws, basically. It seems biological sex is protected, as in, for the purposes of the Equality Act, females, for instance, are a class that deserves special protection, partly in relation to things like pregnancy, but also sex discrimination. But you've also got this act that seems to suggest, at least to some people, that with a certificate, you can change your sex and you can leapfrog into that category. Now, sorry, this is complicated. Sorry about this. But at this point, activism got involved. This was 2010 when this law came out, but in 2015 or thereabouts, everybody went crazy, in my view. And the trans activists took over the LGB organizations. And basically, from then on, they had this new goal in the UK, which was to bring about self-ID, which you've talked about a lot on this podcast, and I've talked about it too. So that was saying you don't need a certificate at all. If you feel like you are of the opposite sex, then if you've got gender identity, the female gender identity, even though you've got male genitalia or whatever, you're a woman now. And you get access to all the spaces and the sports and privileges and protections that females get access to. For the next few years, people like me were fighting that and saying, no, hang on, that just can't be right. And I'm sure your listeners know what my thoughts on that are. But in the meantime, as we pushed back against self-ID, it became clear that there was this confusion about what gender recognition certificate actually did for you. The problem seemed to be that if you had one, you were not only protected as, say, a male gets a gender recognition certificate and becomes a woman in inverted commas. So that person is then protected under gender recognition as a protected characteristic, but they're also protected under female. And what I haven't also said is that a third protected characteristic that seems relevant here is sexual orientation. So the Equality Act protects you if you're lesbian or gay, and actually, I suppose, if you're heterosexual in some can imagine a situation where heterosexuals were discriminated against. So does this male who now has this certificate, this biological male who is now a woman and technically and now is now protected under gender recognition, femaleness and lesbianness, if they say, I'm a lesbian as well, by the way, I'm a woman attracted to other women, that just seemed A, wrong, and B, confusing, because it confused these categories. Like the category of females plus males with certificates is not really a well-formed category for the purposes of the Equality Act. So,
Can I ask you a question really quickly, Kathleen?
So this is
So
just
when you,
background. I haven't even got to
I know,
the.
when you mentioned the different categories that the Equality Act of 2010 covered, you said sex and then also gender recognition. But for some reason, people were saying, okay, I have this certificate. They were actually issued a certificate. I've never seen one. Okay, so they're issued a certificate, and does it say on it, for all intents and purposes, you are now categorized legally as a woman or a man, or does it
Well,
say
that's
male or female?
so that was the ambiguity. So that I don't, I, to be honest, I can't remember what the certificate says, but the law says you have acquired this gender for all purposes. And in the very next clause, I think it then says, apart from these ones, like apart from sport, apart from inheritance. So there was already some weird drafting going on. Plus, I think once you got a gender recognition certificate originally, you could then go and change your passport and your birth certificate retrospectively. People then started changing their passports and without a gender recognition certificate. There's basically the, everything just got very confused, partly because we have this organization called Stonewall that was an HR advisory group, I mean, also a campaigning group that was telling all these employers, oh, you need to completely restructure your organization now. You don't, it doesn't even, you, people don't need gender recognition certificates anymore. It's just going to be done on gender identity. And they would say that's the law. That is the law. That was a lie. It wasn't the law, but they would say it was. Or they would say that's what the law should be. So let's pretend it is. In
Or
the context of
they
a,
recognized the ambiguities and they capitalized on that. I
yeah,
mean,
I think that's
I think
probably
the Human Rights
true. That's
Campaign is
true.
similar here in the United States. It's
I
like a
mean,
stonewall.
actually, they keep it very, very quiet now, but you can go back and find evidence that Stonewall back in the day was campaigning against these single-sex exemptions in the Equality Act. So they didn't want females to have special protections, even then, as a class. They now pretend that that's not what they were doing at all, but that's because the wind has changed. Anyway, so in the context of all this confusion, this group called For Women Scotland, a feminist activist group in Scotland, as the name suggests, took the Scottish government to court quite a few years ago now, because this thing's been going on through various lower courts and then getting up to higher courts. And they were arguing about a specific piece of legislation the Scottish government passed, because it's a devolved government, so it gets powers to make Scottish legislation. And this act that they were concerned with was called, I think, the Public Boards Act. I can't remember exactly the name, but it was basically the thing they were objecting to was the, so in Scotland at the time it said that boards, as in public boards associated with public organisations, had to have 50% women. You know, you may object to that for other reasons. You may think that that's a kind of social engineering project. Lots of conservative people would, but anyway, that's what it said. But then the Scottish government tried to interpret that as meaning you, someone with a gender recognition certificate, which said woman, could be on the board. So theoretically, you could have a public board that was 100% male, but still satisfied this criterion. Women Scotland said, hang on a minute, that's not what the intention of the law was. It was intended to bring women into public life. It wasn't intended to bring people with certificates, men with certificates into public life. And they won the first part of that case in a lower court, then they lost the next bit. Can't remember exactly. And anyway, it just got kicked all the way up to the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the land, and it's for the whole of UK. This had gone to British Isles level, not just Scotland. And at this point, a woman called Sally Wainwright, who was a Scottish lesbian, sent out a message to various organizations, lesbian organizations, including mine, and said, should we intervene in this case? Because this doesn't just have consequences for females generally, it has consequences for lesbians specifically, in terms of what happens to the protected characteristic of sexual orientation when it's understood in some way that a man with a certificate has just become a lesbian, as long as his sexual orientation lines up. I mean, I'm saying man, but you know, male, biological male, whatever. We applied to intervene, so did lots of other organizations. And that just means you either have a written intervention where you're allowed by the court to send some evidence, or you can do, I don't know what the opposite, the more enhanced version is called exactly. I think it's, well, anyway, you get to show up in the court and you get a lawyer who makes an argument on your behalf. Now, we didn't get that, but we got the written evidence opportunity. And so LGB Alliance, Lesbian Project, that's us, and the Scot group called the Scottish Lesbians, with the help of another group called Lesbian Labour, which is attached to the Labour Party. We all got together and we had some lawyers draw up a statement or a set of arguments on our behalf, pointing to discrimination against lesbians, trying to point out that it is a genuine class that faces genuine discrimination and oppression, not because of the possession of certificates, but because of being female and being attracted to females, and that that understanding of that class is threatened by this weird gerrymandered appearance in the Equality Act. So could you please clarify this, judges? And they did. So basically, we were all on tenterhooks. Nobody really knew which way it was going to go, but it came back very dramatically that it was a unanimous decision on part of all these judges that sex in the Equality Act meant biological sex, sexual orientation meant the biological sex attracted to another biological sex. And that was what the Equality Act had always meant. So these people are interpret they're not making new law, they're supposed to be pronouncing on what the law really meant from 2010 onwards. So in other words, other people have just got it wrong. At this point, all hell broke loose. So I'm just going to stop now in case you want to ask me questions, but that's my summary so far.
One of the things that it makes me ponder is because of the vagueness of the 2004 Gender Recognition Act, that possibly some people just misunderstood it, because there's so often that we can hear what people say that's based on an interpretation, whether there's an attempt to create an interpretation versus actually stating an interpretation. And then it's like that telephone game, where you pass the message from person to person and it gets all distorted by the time it reaches the end of the line. That I wonder if sometimes that is part of what goes on, because not everybody is paying as close attention. And so oftentimes we're relying on those in our communities that have special knowledge. They're lawyers. And we go, oh, well, the lawyers have said this, or the
Oh, yeah.
organization leaders have said this. And
Yeah.
we haven't had reason to doubt them. We're
Yeah.
not looking at it through that lens. But there can be oftentimes people can get into, mix in with these individuals and really skew information. They can mislead, but it
Absolutely.
doesn't look like it on the surface, and you don't know it until some time has passed.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, to be fair to everybody who isn't a lawyer, there was this confusion. I mean, I can say with some pride that in my book, which I wrote in 2021 or was published in 2021, I wrote it in 2020. I think right in the first few pages, I say there is confusion between the Equality Act and the Gender Recognition Act. So I think it was obvious that there was. And I think any honest broker would say, on any side, would say, yes. We're just lay people. We didn't really, this could have gone either way. Having said that, there are clearly, you're right, that there are lawyers and experts, so-called experts, HR experts, lawyers, who've made a career for themselves acting as if they are the Supreme Court, in effect. They're saying, we know what the law means, and we're going to tell you what the law means, and this is what it means for your organization. They've got a lots of kudos out of that. They've surfed the wave of rainbow activism. They're very progressive. They think of themselves as very progressive, forward thinking. And used to work in university. We used to get these people in. They would be represent big fancy law firms, and they would be like, oh yeah, don't worry about that. This is what it means, and this is what you should do. And they've all been caught short now. So they don't know how to respond except to say that this can't be right. It must be a mistake. Can we take it to the European Court of Human Rights now? There's enormous amounts of outrage, but also I think face saving because they really have left organizations in the lurch. So the situation now is just legally speaking, even though the law has now been clarified, we have this body called the EHRC. the Equality and Human Rights Commission, and they're independent, but they are basically appointed in order to practically interpret the law, give guidance to organizations. How can you best respect the terms of the Equality Act and foster equality in your organization? So they now have to come up with guidance for organizations. They've put out some interim guidance, but they're now doing a consultation and we're all supposed to respond. But there's huge amounts of heat around this guidance that they're going to put out. Lots of organizations are saying we're not going to do anything, we're not changing anything about the way that we've organized the changing rooms or data protection or anything until we see what the guidance says. And as you'd probably expect, and as you know, this is the themes that tend to pop up. The biggest problem for everybody, it seems, or at least for quite a lot of people, is bathrooms. What do we do about the bathroom? So it's not necessarily about sport or pregnancy or these other issues. It's about bathrooms because organizations now don't know what to do. What the HRC have said so far is single sex means single sex. So if you have presented a space as a single sex space, then it's a single sex space. That doesn't stop you in most contexts also having a mixed sex space. And you can put on all three. But if you've got one that says male, then it means male. And if you've got one that says female, it means female. And then I think it's also, the guidance also says, and if you have a duty to provide facilities for everybody, so you will need to put on a third space if that's what's required. But this is just causing so much, you can imagine, and I can see the problems, like people that have used the same facilities for years are now feeling vulnerable, victimized. Suddenly they've got to move, become very vitriolic.
In the United States, bathrooms has been an ongoing issue for decades because we used to have in many places around the United States bathrooms that were labeled whites and colored. And then we had bathrooms that were ill-equipped for individuals, perhaps who were using wheelchairs. So we had to desegregate, racially desegregate our bathrooms. Then we needed to create bathrooms that accommodated individuals in wheelchairs and with other mobility issues. And so, and put special labels on the door to show an individual in a wheelchair, like a little symbol. And then all of a sudden, yes, there were these issues of where do people who might be like me, trans? I remember going into the bathrooms for years, of course, as an adult, pre-transition, and just encountering on a fairly regular basis just guff from the women who suspected that I was in the wrong place, and I could see on their faces a range of emotions from fear to disgust to contempt to I'm not sure if you encounter those kinds of reactions. I was never physically assaulted beyond being pushed on a couple of occasions by teenage girls when I was in my 30s or 20s, actually.
Sorry,
So,
I'm not laughing, but
yeah, they were tough. You
yeah.
know, that's all right.
Humiliating.
I know it was a little because I didn't want to do anything because they were minors, you know, and
Yeah,
my
of
instinct, of
course.
course,
Yeah,
was to
it's
push
horrible.
back, but I didn't. But so, like, I understand that I had that experience.
Yeah, of
But
course. Yeah.
now I live in the state of Florida here in the United States, and the state of Florida has a law that says if I need to use the bathroom in any public building, which means government, right? People get confused. Public doesn't mean commercial. It doesn't mean at the
Right.
restaurant or the bar or the bookstore. People don't understand that over here very well. Public means government, the library, the courthouse, things like that, the universities that are run by the state. And so technically I'm supposed to go into the women's bathroom or bathrooms labeled as female because my sex is female. I'm never going to do that. Because it would cause even more
Yeah.
ruckus than when I
And
went
that's the
in
problem.
as a
That
gender
is the problem.
non-conforming female.
Yeah.
So now, if I can find one, I do like to follow rules. I'm a former police officer. I like to follow the laws. So if there is a third option, like one of those single occupancy bathrooms where it doesn't really matter your sexes or what your gender presentation is, I just go in them. Or sometimes they're labeled family bathrooms. That's something that we see a lot over here. And so I do that. Plus, it's just nicer, you know, they're more,
Yeah, that's true.
I would think that might be an option, right?
Yeah, well, one would hope. I mean, I think this is something that I did raise in my book as well. And I raised it delicately at the time, and it's been totally misinterpreted, partly maliciously since. But I do think that it's not enough to say, oh, biological sex just goes where the sign is. Clearly, it isn't. And actually, for reasons that you've pointed out that, I mean, to put it brutally, if you come to a female bathroom, people will think you're a man, obviously.
Yes.
They might be frightened or they might not. But the point is that if you walk in, because you look just like a man, any man can walk in. If you can come in, any
Yes.
man can come in, because all we've got is the way we look in that context. You can't ask for a certificate. These are public spaces. People go in and out. There's social norms that try and keep it safe for women. And that was a part of the problem with self-ID in the first place, was the idea that just anyone could come in based on, you could no longer refer to how people looked as any kind of vague guide, because a guy that just decided that morning that he was a female could come in according to the technical rules. So there's two considerations. One is that it's terrible for trans men who have taken loads of hormones and now look male, and it's terrible for them, but it's also counterproductive to the whole ethos to say that trans men who pass should just go into a female bathroom because they pass, and that's the point. I think the issue is not so much with the other way around, because if a trans woman passes and she goes into a male bathroom, now the problem may be that she is threatened there, but the men are not threatened by her presence, and they're not going to be threatened particularly if more women start going in. We don't have a problem that way around. There's not females roaming around male bathrooms looking for victims, but in the way that there are men who want to get into female spaces to attack them, and that cannot be denied. Although, of course, it's not common. So all of that is very difficult. And I think there's a kind of intransigence in my side of the fence in not acknowledging the complexity there, because I see a lot of people online, you know, gender critical or self-described TERFs saying, oh, you can always tell, oh, it's fine. But you clearly can't. But they're just like, that's what's it called? Motivated reasoning, where after the fact you think, oh yeah, I can see maybe a bit shorter, maybe than usual, but you know, you just can't, you could never tell unless you already knew.
We will be taking our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Xander Kagg. And his guest this hour is Dr. Kathleen Stock, who has returned to discuss the recent UK Supreme Court ruling that sex in the 2010 Equality Act refers to biological sex. We hope that you have enjoyed this discussion so far. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We're back from our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Xander Kegg, and his guest this hour is Dr. Kathleen Stock. Let's get back to where they left off.
Yeah, a lot of times when I hear people say things like, oh, you can always tell, especially with trans men, oh, you can always tell, what that indicates to me is that they have known people who have transitioned in the early stages. When you're
or that they're just desperate to
androgynous.
Prove a point. I mean, I don't
Right?
think you're being charitable. I think they're just desperate to prove a point.
Maybe. My wife always accuses me of being too diplomatic. You know,
yeah, yes, it's very sweet of you. You know, you're right, though. I mean, of course, if a 17-year-old female decides she's a boy, then for the first few months, no one's going to think that's true. After a few years, and I think, obviously, you tell me, but it seems to me trans men, on average, who have taken cross-sex hormones pass more successfully than males who have taken them, much more successfully,
Yes,
because you
because
can't get rid
we
of
didn't go
the.
through female puberty doesn't, obviously there are changes, but the kinds of changes that come with male puberty can't be undone with hormones. Only surgeries usually. But so that does make it more difficult. Talk about this EHRC. Had they put out guidance previously to what companies needed to
That's a good
do around
question.
the original 2010 Equalities Act?
Yes,
Because,
they had. And
yeah,
the
and
thing
was it
is,
wrong?
well, yeah, who was wrong? I mean, the HRC is a moving entity, as it were, because its composition, it changes over time. And there was a time when it was activist adjacent people. That's the trouble in equality and diversity and inclusion areas. Wherever you find them, you will find people with a certain kind of point of view who are attracted to that job. Same with NGOs. You don't find people who are particularly skeptical on average of certain dogma in the progressive space. You find people who
They're
think
on a mission.
that sounds amazing, and I really want to work there so I could change the world, is what they think. And I think that's to some extent true even of bodies like the EHRC that were supposed to be neutral. But of course, the law is never neutral. I don't even think it's neutral now. It's always people interpreting them according to background values and systems. So yes, there was a time when the EHRC was getting it wrong and was quite hostile, in fact, to commonsensical points about protecting female spaces and sports, although I'm sure they would disagree with me about that. Everybody's now, of course, reverse what we call reverse ferreting, as in finding a plausible, deniable narrative about how they never really thought that thing and they never really said that thing. And there's quite a lot of shifting about what people used to think in
Revisionist
relation to what they think
history.
now. Yeah,
That's
exactly.
always nice. But it sounds to me maybe the EHRC was a driver of this misinterpretation or misapplication of the act that then maybe Stonewall picked it up and ran with it, right? Because if you're waiting for this guidance to come
It's
out, or
more
maybe they
like,
collaborated.
I'm afraid it's the other way around. See, Stonewall had this incredible access to organizations through what it was called its Diversity Champions scheme. So people, organizations would pay them to get accredited, and then they would get into this competition. Every year, Stonewall would announce the top 100 organizations. It was all supposed to be good for branding. And Stonewall would basically give them instructions. This is what you need to do to improve your ranking. And this, believe it or not, the EHRC, oh God, I hope I'm right in saying this, I'm pretty sure I am, was a diversity champion too. And that seems crazy, but that's the world we were living in. So was the BBC, so was the Guardian, so was the Channel 4, so was the Labour Party. They were all Stonewall champions. So they were getting police forces, educational bodies, universities, my former university was. So they were all getting this information. So really, to be honest, Stonewall was in charge, and if anything, the EHRC was its lackey, basically.
Interesting.
That's a,
That sounds exactly like the Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index and Healthcare
Yes, it
Equality
is. I
Index.
think it might have
I'm wondering
stolen. They
which
might have
one
stolen the
started.
idea. Yeah, exactly. I
Who
don't know.
took a cue? We tend to take a cue from Brit.
Still
Everybody was
maybe.
like, "Ooh, look at these new shows on TV, like Survivor." It's like, "Ah, oh, that came from Britain, right?" We're
The things
constantly
we've given the
borrowing.
world.
That's
I
right.
apologize.
It's so interesting. So, do you have knowledge of who were the drivers of the process of getting the Gender Recognition Act to become law? Is it the same people that were involved in the Equality Act?
Well, I have rough knowledge and I can give you broad brush. So originally, the very important influential group was this group called Press for Change. And their main architect was a trans man called Stephen Whittle. Stephen Whittle was also involved in the Yogyakarta principles. He's had an enormous influence on
He was the first
the
trans
shape.
president of WPATH when it
Right,
was
there
the
you
Harry
go. I
Benjamin
mean, he's
International Gender
absolutely
Story
everywhere.
Association.
Absolutely everywhere. And for a while, just had total social capital. Everybody listened to him. He's absolutely furious now. He's tweeting all the time about it. I suppose he thinks his legacy is being trashed or whatever, but things have changed. He's no longer in charge of British institutions in the way he was. But he was this instrumental player. And when it comes to the Equality Act, I think by then, I don't know about that direct influence, because I think for a while there was just a kind of Wild West. Anyone that rocked up with the kind of right look and the right saying the right sorts of things could get in around the table. But by 2010, bearing in mind that this Equality Act was drawing together previous pieces of legislation, including the Race Relations Act, I think it was called. I'm sure I'm making slight mistakes in the way I'm doing this, so I apologize for any lawyers are listening. Anyway, it was bringing together like lots of disparate equality legislation under one heading. So it wouldn't be that, Stephen Whittle had an enormous influence in all of that. But his ideas were still knocking about, and they had been by that point sort of operationalized through bodies like Stonewall.
So interesting. When you talk about how some of the carve-outs, in addition to sports, you mentioned inheritance, like a particular title inheritance, which is not something we really deal with much here in the States. But it reminded me of a story that I read about years and years ago and kind of sort of kept up with over the years about a trans man in Britain, in the UK. His name was Michael Dillon, Dr. Michael Dillon. He was a medical doctor. He completed medical training in Ireland. He became a ship surgeon for something like the Merchant Marines or Merchant Navy or something in Britain. And he came from an aristocratic family. So we're talking in the 1940s, he transitioned. He was taking testosterone. He was the first trans man to have phalloplasty in the 1940s with a very famous plastic surgeon who was working with the military, Dr. Giles or Gilles, Giles. He was correcting genital malformations that occurred during wartime. So Dr. Dillon met
Fascinating.
him while he was in medical school, and that's who performed his surgery, because that's the surgery that this doctor was doing. But his family was aristocratic, and they were in something called peerage. Is that
The
correct? Is
peerage. Yeah, the peerage
peerage.
is, I think the peerage is just the set of peers, and peers are aristocrats, titles people in the upper classes who have family names that go back generations and where at some point a king or some royal gave them a title that then
Interesting.
passes down. So there's hereditary peers and then there's life peers. People, I don't think they create new hereditary peers anymore. They make life peers. So basically you can become Baroness so and so, but that's just for life and it doesn't go down to your children. But the thing about hereditary peers is obviously that it goes to the first son, it goes son to son. And I guess what this is the sort of hilarious thing about the Gender Recognition Act, one of the many hilarious things about it is that it's saying for all intents and purposes, your required gender has now changed, except if you're a female, you can't just get into the peerage. You can't suddenly jump the queue of your brother and
I love
become
that.
Lord so and so. Just
Sounds like a
goes to
Monty
show,
Python
really.
skit.
The basic power structure stayed the same. It was just tinkering around.
Well, there was some controversy because when he changed his name, when Dr. Michael Dillon changed his name, he updated the records. And then his brother found out. And then, but updating the records brought the media attention.
Oh, into
And so,
Debrett's or something like that. So the basically there's a big book that lists all the peers and their relationship to each other. Right, with you.
And so all of a sudden he's getting off a ship and there's reporters there. He ran away from the reporters. He ended up becoming a reclusive Buddhist monk in the Himalayas and wrote a bunch of books under that name, and
Wow, what
quite
a life.
interesting character. Very interesting. Went to Oxford, was on the rowing team, and as a
Really?
woman,
Right.
very interesting.
Yeah, that is
Very
interesting.
interesting.
We have these famous British or English trans women characters from the 50s and 60s. Everybody's heard of April Ashley. Actually, hang on, is April Ashley English or is she American? Can't remember.
Now, I was going to mention Roberta Cowell.
Oh, I
She
actually don't
was
know
a
that. I was going to
race
say
car
Jan Morris,
driver.
April Ashley. Well, my
In
point
the
is that we
late
hear
50s.
about the male to females, but we don't hear so much
That's
about
right.
the other way around.
Dr. Michael Dillon wrote a book in 1946 called Self, and it's all about endocrinology, which I don't think was an official medical discipline at the time, but he had been taking testosterone and his body was changing, his voice was changing, things about him were changing, his navigation of society was changing. And he wrote a book, again, published in 1946. I have a first print edition, and it's talking about taking hormones for the sole purpose of changing your appearance so that you can live as the opposite sex
Right,
in
gosh.
society. And most people are familiar with Dr. Harry Benjamin's book that came out in 1966. I think it was called something like The Transsexual Phenomenon. And parts of his book, some parts of it are owed to Dr. Dillon's work, but he's
Wow.
never referenced.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, but that's a little bit of a digression. But when I was thinking about this, not through inheritance, what's happening now? So what has the impact been? You've talked a little bit about it, right? Some people are upset. They're trying to take this to a higher court. Can they? Is there a higher court than the UK
No.
Supreme Court? Okay.
No, there is none. I mean, what's happening is.
If Britain had not exited from the EU, would there be
Oh,
a higher
God.
court?
I think so. I think so. I mean, I think we still can technically take cases to the European Court of Human Rights. As I understand it, it wasn't a ruling that referred to any European Court of Human Rights judgment explicitly. It's about, to be honest, that's the limit of my legal knowledge about whether it could go higher. But I understand it can't go higher. And
Like
anyway,
us within
so
the United States, same thing.
yeah, I think so. So some organizations have just taken it, I think they've done the intelligent thing. Sporting organizations have just obviously used this as an opportunity to go, okay, well, we can't do anything about this. This is what the courts have told us to do. So I think that applies to English cricket. They had had this ridiculous situation of males, big, strong, testosterone-fueled, post-pubertal males, throwing balls at 100 miles an hour at females in the name of equality and inclusion, and also meaning that females are not getting on the team because some males taking the place. That situation was unsustainable. Yeah, and then so after the ruling, English cricket came out and said teams will be single sex in the original meaning of the term. Same for the FA, which is the Football Association. Because again, they got themselves in an absolute ridiculous situation. Even worse, they were throwing young girls off teams for saying things like, is that a man? When they were faced with playing one. They were also limiting female players' freedom of expression to even just mention biological facts. They just got themselves into a total corner. And so they're acting like the judgment means that they now have to reluctantly respect the law. But then there are other organizations which are not doing that yet and are saying basically, we can't believe that this is what the ruling really means. So we're going to wait and see what the HRC say. So that's not brilliant.
When is that
Obviously,
expected to come out, the EHRC guidance?
they're running a consultation at the moment that closes in June. I imagine it might be months, to be honest, because it's going to be quite tricky. I think it's going to be quite tricky to, especially this issue that we've talked about. I think that's the trickiest issue. And it's going to mean that lots of organizations are going to have to put in extra resource as well, probably, or change things. It's physical space that is going to have to be altered in some way. So I think that'll take some months. As I don't know, I mean, it's an interesting landscape. It's Pride Month now. I just wrote a piece for the Sunday Times where I said, who knows where Pride is going in the UK? It seems to have run out of a lot of energy. Stonewall is financially struggling now. Also, it turns out USAID was funding Stonewall. So when Elon Musk and Donald Trump cut USAID, is it USAID or USAID?
USAID,
Yeah,
they like to say here.
USAID. Sorry, okay, USAID. Stonewall immediately lost $600,000, which was coming from US taxpayers to Stonewall. I mean, it's nuts. Pride organizations are running out of money. Some local prides, provincial pride parades are being cancelled because they don't have enough money. Sponsors are pulling out. So there's something happening. People are fed up with it, I think, on some level. However, the Supreme Court ruling plus the whole puberty blocker thing, which is also happening. So the health secretary here has banned puberty blockers for under 18s and has now ordered a review of cross-sex hormones for under 18s. And it looks like there may be changes there too. So if you put that together with the Supreme Court ruling, it's produced this idea that trans people are being persecuted, like properly persecuted by the government now. That's how it's being read. Before, I think they were busy struggling to make up some kind of persecution, but now they've got something that they can say, no, look, we're not getting the drugs we need. We're being kicked out of bathrooms. It's all transphobia. That's actually galvanizing certain parts of the left. So there was a big demonstration within days of the Supreme Court ruling. About thousands of people turned up in Parliament Square to protest. That protest got, it was called at very short notice, got lots and lots of people turned up. In the press, it got a lot of attention because some of the banners that people were holding said the only good turf is a dead turf, or you know, they had pictures of hangman's nooses, they had a picture of a turf being stabbed in the eye, etc., etc. So those were men who had those posters and banners. But there was also a lot of very well-meaning young women there, very well-meaning, who are very worried clearly about what's happening. I'm just wondering how we bridge this gulf, which just looks further away than ever, really.
We will be taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Xander Cagg and his guest, Dr. Kathleen Stock, who is back to discuss the recent UK Supreme Court ruling that sex in the Equality Act of 2010 refers to biological sex. We are always grateful to our sponsors and therefore grateful to run their commercials. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Xander Cagg and his guest, Dr. Kathleen Stock. Let's pick up where we left off.
People ask me, why are things like this happening? They're confused by it. Phrases like anti-trans people doing this, why they want to erase us. It's a difficult question to answer because I think it's being presented in a way that's not factual, but the fear is what's driving the concerns. And it doesn't help that we have different entities, whether they're on social media or legacy media, that are phrasing things in a particular way that's causing people to become angry or afraid, right? Feeling fear.
Yeah. I mean, the bias is obvious.
Right. Here we might say the extreme left and the extreme right. It's a minority of people, but they're so loud. They have such a platform in which to express their views that it gets amplified in a way that is not natural, right? It wouldn't be this way without those amplification methods. You know, I often have parents say to me, what am I supposed to do? My kid is traumatized. My kid is distressed. My kid has suicidal thoughts, right? Suicidal ideation, we would say clinically. What am I supposed to do? And I say, well, now is the time to make every opportunity available for your child and you and your family to get as much psychosocial support as possible and develop resiliency.
You've touched on something there that I think is much more interesting than all the local disputes, which is the bigger, the deeper social currents that are pushing this conflict. And they're not just apparent in this area. I mean, another area, without wanting to get into like the specifics, but you know, another area is assisted dying, which is extremely contentious as well. And I can see parallels between the two, because basically there's a bunch of people going, I want it now, you're cruel for not giving it to me. Now you can see lots of differences there, but you as a society now seem to be unable to tolerate all of that, but also to differentiate between rights and good to haves, or nice to haves, or fun to haves, or whatever, things that seemed like they would solve all our problems, we had them.
Yes.
But that's not right. The notion of human rights was restricted when it came in. But the language of rights is it to be the right to change your body in any way, the right to end your life exactly when you want to, and so on. So I think that's actually the deeper issue about how we're ending up here, because this won't be the last time this sort of conflict arises. There'll be more in future. They might not be about gender, but they will be about a group of the population demanding something and get it. So I don't blame parents for feeling completely overwhelmed in that situation. And you do want to do the right thing, and you just don't know what the right thing is. I've not been in that situation, but I have been in situations of parenting where I've really sit with it and not rush into it, because it is, as you say, a lesson. If we can all tolerate it, the anxiety of it, you learn from it, don't you? And everybody has them. Suffering is basically endemic to the human condition. It's how you deal with suffering. And children need to, teenagers need to, they will.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned, you said, my book. I'd love for you to tell the listener the title of your book where they can find the Lesbian Project and maybe something, what you're up to.
My book I wrote in 2021, it's called Material Girls, Why Reality Matters for Feminism. And if you're in the UK, you can buy it at any bookshop that stocks it, but you can definitely get it online. And if you're in the US, you can get it on Kindle, or you can order it, but to come from the UK, because unfortunately it never got published properly in the US. Now, the Lesbian Project has a podcast that has a Substack called The Lesbian Project Podcast. And then our sort of serious doings is at thelesbianproject.uk, I think, websites. One's for like our serious face and one of us for our silly podcast. And then finally, what I'm doing most of the time is writing a book. My deadline's 3 weeks time on, as I just mentioned, the case against assisted dying, as I see it. It's actually not against assisted dying. It's against assisted dying services, like institutionalization of assisted dying within a healthcare system. That's where I think all the problems lie. So I'm deep into that, and that will be coming out next year.
Very interesting. I think there are a couple of states in the United States that have
dying
with dignity. In Canada, Oregon. They've got something going
Canada's
on.
Going, yeah, Karen's, in Canada, 4.7% of all deaths are now assisted. So it's gone crazy. Yeah, I'm getting into all of that. I'm looking at the Oregon system, the Canadian system, the Dutch system, where people are being euthanized for mental illness alone with no underlying physical condition, like people in their 30s with bipolar being euthanized because of that. People with autism being euthanized because they can't cope with the world. It's really quite bad.
Thank you. Yeah, thank goodness for drawing some attention to that. That's wonderful. And again, thank you for coming on the Umbrella Hour for a second time. It's been a wonderful opportunity.
Me.
Yeah, of course, to hear more about what's going on. Yeah.
Cheers.
And again, thank you for listening. And please let us know what you think about this episode and all our episodes. And please do share them with your friends.
We have come to the end of the Umbrella Hour with Xander Keg and his guest, Dr. Kathleen Stock. Thank you for listening.